recognize the minutes, but we can start out by announcing, get my glasses on here, because somebody wrote so small. We have, it says here 9 through 12, is that right? 9th through 12th grade? 9th through 12th grade students from the Langford Homeschool Co-op. They are participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour and Educational Program. So welcome and thank you very much for coming. Okay, it looks like we got a quorum. We'll start out with a roll call.
Cornish.
Here.
Woodard.
Here.
Mullery.
Here.
Gauthier.
You can mark me present this year.
Grunhagen.
Here.
Hilty. Johnson.
Here.
Kelly.
Here.
Kiefer. Kreisel.
Here.
Leidiger.
Here.
Mariani. McDonald.
Here.
Moran.
Here.
Nornis.
Here.
Slocum. Smith.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes from February 16th. Okay, Representative Kelly moves the minutes of February 16th. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Members, today we're going to be doing a budget overview of the governor's budget, I should say, and I think that's in your packet. And excuse me, remember this is just the first shot out of the cannon, and we'll probably get major revisions to that. Our naturally the GOP and the DFL will tussle over this figure for the next month or so, and our own people might come up with further reductions, and you see, and the totals will change in the spreadsheets and balance sheets, and so it'll be an interesting time that we have to solve this dilemma of not enough funding to go around. And I would encourage the DFL members, Representative Mullery and crew, that any ideas you have, come up with me to me as soon as possible or along the way, and give me your input is always welcome. And when it's all over, we'll see where it goes. But Representative Mullery, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the budget for this committee looks pretty good.
Yes, it does so far. anybody else had a question? All right. With that, Mr. Carter, are you ready to begin?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I should point out that you will be probably receiving the budget books towards the end of the week. And then you can start your studies and your reading. Also, we'll be presenting the governor's budget, and there may be some changes to the governor's budget because we get the February forecast will be coming out February 28th, and hopefully, everybody is anticipating at least a small bit of good news, but we won't know until the 28th. So there could be some changes then in the governor's budget. Now, I'd like to start out. You have the spreadsheets in front of you, or the spreadsheet. And basically, this is your standard spreadsheet. We try to keep this simple for members. If members need more information, the first spreadsheet that I handed out has the base and the past the funding for 11, 10 and 11. This is a sort of like we decided that this is a very easy spreadsheet to work with, and I didn't want to confuse you with a lot of columns. Basically, on A, B, and C, these are the governor's recommendations for this the next biennium that we will be budgeting for. Then we have the governor's recs on D, E, and F, those columns. Those are for 2014 and 2015. And for new members, this is what we call tails. In other words, you're also budgeting, really you're budgeting for 4 years out. So and we can, as you can see that the dollars are in thousands, so one equals $1,000. I mean, that's an easy thing to mix up. Overall, there was, from the past spending, there was a slight increase from 10 and 11, less than 1%. And I will start out with public safety. And public safety on line 8, you see that there is a disaster assistant match for this current fiscal year, 2011. That's on line 8 and 9. And that is for a little over $2 million, $2,043,000. Now, I'm going to skip off the budget a minute, but this is what you have here is a change page. You're going to see this for every item that the governor has a recommendation for. And it's sort of like a fiscal note. Basically, you see it's the public safety department, it's the program is the next one, it's Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and it's a change item for disaster assistance match. You can see that under the little table there that you see that it's a general fund expenditure of $2,043,000, and it's general funds. If there were other funds that would have it in there, if there was revenue savings, that would also include that. It gives what the recommendation is, and it says that the governor is recommending this to cover the federal disaster assistance, and it's to cover the match. There's a 25% match that the state usually picks up in these disasters. And these are the past disasters. They come in at different times. So there is usually from the past years there has always been a deficiency as far as I can remember. Some of this is for the floods or from the tornadoes. Also, you'll see the rationale, and this will be on every change item. It gives you the rationale for the change. Also, the governor has requested that there be key goals and measures that should be addressed. And also, the last item is if there's any statutory changes. In this case, it's not applicable, but in some of these, you will see statutory changes, and that means that you will be getting a bill from the governor that would talk about the statutory changes. Okay, so we'll go back to the spreadsheet, and I should point out too that this is the governor has not really made a lot of changes in past years. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on change items. This year, there is really very few compared to other years. The BCA is the next program under public safety. You can see that the governor has no recommendations there, so there is no change from base funding. In other words, in base funding would be, you can see the total there on line 27 would be a little over, close to $85 million for the biennium. The next item we have is the fire marshal. And there's two change items here. It relates to the fire the fund that the fire account that's in the fire marshal's area. This is the surcharge on tax or your fire insurance premiums. It's a 0.65% insurance premium, and it goes to the office of the fire marshal. It goes to the firefighter training programs. But here you can see that on line 31 that the governor is transferring $2.633 million each year to the general fund. This is basically will be help to offset the budget deficit. They are projected to have a balance in that fund of a little over $9 million. So the governor, like I said, is using part of that balance to help with the budget problems. Now I should point out that this is not new to this committee. In 2008, this is when the budget problem started hitting the state. There was a transfer of $2 million to the general fund. The 2009 session, there was a transfer of a little over $600,000 to emergency management to fund the hazardous materials and CAT teams. Those are the chemical assessment teams that some of the local units of government have. And last session, there was a $10.5 million transfer to the general fund. This was one time. Now, I should point out that this transfer here on line 31 going to the general fund will be an ongoing transfer that is recommended by the governor. The next transfer out from that fund is on line 32, and that's a transfer of health care insurance reimbursement. In other words, this is the health insurance that's public safety is paying out to injured firefighters and police officers is paying for their insurance until I believe they reach 65 years of age. And the governor is recommending that this now be funded by the fire safety account. And that comes up to about $1.367 million a year. And once again, that is an ongoing transfer. Now, Mr. Chair, you might have to do some work on this one because there is a savings to the general fund, but the savings is in the the Transportation Finance Committee, because this is really under, now to confuse you even more, we don't have jurisdiction over the Transportation Finance Committee, and they have the administration, the program of administration that's responsible, and that's where this funding comes from. So I think there might be, if this goes through, I mean, we don't know who will really take the savings. Are there any questions on that, the fire account? Okay, next we'll go to the alcohol.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
On the fire account, do you want questions now, or I can save it till the end? I want to discuss the fire account.
We could take them now, Representative Smith.
I have a handout. I'd like the pages to pass out. It's the statute on the fire safety account. I'll admit I came in a little late and I didn't hear Mr. Carger's full discussion of it, but I have heard in the past reference made to this account that it's a surplus in the account, and I would just think the committee should ponder that for a moment. The definition of the word surplus means a quantity much larger than is needed, a quantity or amount in excess of what is required, an amount or a quantity in excess of what is needed, or it's a quantity or amount over and above what is needed or used. The fire safety count, when it was initially established, was not to be meant as a surplus account, but rather an amount of revenue that's required to do a job relative to the fire marshal and the safety of the state of Minnesota. A commitment was made when the fire account was established and is to the public, and it's renewed every time they pay their homeowner or commercial insurance policies. An additional fee being charged by the state to go to fire safety purposes. In the past, this legislature has dipped into that fund, and I'm not going to use words such as stolen or taken from those funds, which is a dedicated account and being used for other purposes. So I would hope that when we go forward with our budget considerations, we consider that the fund is there for fire training, which was the goal from day one.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And we, I'm kind of thinking about having a fire safety day, and where we have a committee on that subject, because I think we'll have at least two, maybe three bills. We hear all the bills, and then I've asked the lobbyist for the fire safety account to get a flow chart, an easel, not a one of these little things up here you can never read, but an actual easel and a flow chart showing where it comes from on the insurance and where it ends up, the firefighters and the steps in between, the advisory board, so everybody knows exactly what we're talking about. So it should be a good day. Okay, anybody else? Okay, Mr. Carger, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, then the next program under public safety is gambling and alcohol enforcement. That starts on line 36 of the spreadsheet. And basically, the governor is recommending no change from base in this program. The next program under public safety is the Office of Justice Programs. This is where a lot of the grants come from for victim services, domestic abuse. The governor is recommending one change here, one change item, and that is a one-time funding for the Network for Better Futures. This is a program that some of you committee members may be acquainted with. It's a program that it deals with people that in reentry or at-risk males, and it provides housing, some treatments for them, job services, and health care. This was, for a little history on this, in the 07 session, This committee funded that program at $1.6 million that was spread over 2 years. In the 09 session, this was funded, I believe, in the Housing Committee and in the Economic Development Committee. But once again, the governor is asking general fund, has a general fund request of $2.9 million. It's a one-time appropriation. The next program...
Mr. Carter?
Yes.
Would that wouldn't be considered the increase of base fund? It'd be a one-time, so it wouldn't be continual in the line item. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, you are absolutely right on that. It is a one-time appropriation, so it would not continue into the next biennium. Mr. Chair and members, the next program is Emergency Communications Network. Mm-hmm. That's on line 56. And this basically is the 911 special revenue account. It's in the state government special revenue fund. And it's armor maintenance and operations. This is the governor is recommending an increase in funding to operate and maintain, and this is what armor stands for, the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response. It's an increase, it's for infrastructure that will be constructed in the final phases of the project. Remember, this is what, there is a surcharge on your phone bill. Part of this is will be used to complete, I guess it's the, they're in phase 4, 5, and 6, I believe. And they will complete that. It's already completed mainly in the metro area and in southeast Minnesota and around the St. Cloud area, if I recollect.
Mr. Carter, if you could answer a question about that. Is this just jump-starting to get it done sooner than the schedule they got that was funded, or is this, you know what I'm getting at? Because we had it scheduled to be, I've had people come up and ask me not to take out of the account, but I haven't had anybody ask for an increase yet. So I've kind of,
you know, I believe that it's probably needed to complete the project. I don't know if this is really going to jump-start it or they just needed the appropriation, but this is sort of like a brief overview of what the governor has projected, and the agencies will give you a much detailed account on what the governor is recommending. Now, if you wanted to, Mr. Chair, you might get a brief answer if somebody is here from Public Safety.
If I can, you volunteer. Mr. Jordahl, would you... Just a brief answer on if this is was requested or what this is all about.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Jared Jordahl, the Government Affairs Director for the Department of Public Safety. This is an appropriation for operations and maintenance. This is not servicing of the revenue bonds. The actual system is funded through revenue bonds, which are serviced through the fee. But this is an appropriation to MnDOT. The money is already there. It's being collected through the fee, as Mr. Carter said. And this is an appropriation to MnDOT. It's reflected in MnDOT's budget pages as well. And this is for the actual operations of the system.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jordahl. I appreciate it. Mr. Carter?
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, that concludes public safety. You can see that the total funding there for the biennium is... close to $328 million. The next page, or the next agency that, in this case it's a board, is the Peace Officers Board, or what we know as the Post Board, and that starts on line 70. And here the governor is recommending two changes. It will be one change sheet in the budget book, but it's two parts to it. Basically, this is going to be a 5% reduction. 5% reduction on line 72 to the operations support, so that is that totals $114,000 for the biennium, and then there's reduction in the grants that go to the local police departments or law enforcement agencies, and that's a reduction of $286,000 for the biennium. Overall, this totals about I believe it's about $400,000 for the biennium. I should point out that the change item sheet said that they expect to reduce staffing by one half of a full-time equivalent as far as the operations are concerned, and this will reduce the training grants. I think the training right now, well, Well, it's 5%. We can come up with a number on that later. So the so that's the reduction there to the post board that the governor is recommending. The next item is, or the next agency is our private detective board on line 79. Governor is recommending no change to base on that. This is our small agency. It's totals, I think, 1.5 full-time equivalents, $240,000 for the biennium.
Well, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't want to let it just slide over because I think it's real important, the training police officers. What is that actually going to cut out?
I could probably tell you. Representative Mullery, as far as what kind of training, what happens is that in my department, I think it's like any other department, the post board sends you out a letter, and they never have enough money to go around to reimburse everybody for all the training. And what it is, it's prorated out, and so we have to collect all of our receipts and bills for the training and where we went, how many credits worth, what subject it covered, and send it into the post board, and then they send us a check prorated by how much they've got per officer in the state, and it helps. I mean, it's a definite. Is that about right, Mr. Melton? Am I describing that somewhat correctly? And so, and we should all be worried about that because we receive classes in use of force, which would interest Representative Moran, from what I can hear in her testimony. And how do we get along with our people in communities of color? Which would interest Representative Mariani because he's an advocate for change there, and how we deal with people in general and the safety of the officers, and it brings into point. I'm sorry to pontificate here, but I'll back it. It brings into question. Each one of us have got an interest. The reason I didn't want to speak on it so much, I didn't want it to look like a self-serving interest for me being a cop. And now Representative Smith has interest in fire safety. I would have an interest in this account. Representative Mullery and Johnson and others would have interest in other accounts. And so that's why it's important we work together and let me know what your interests are and hope we can just balance out this whole budget in the best way. But well, Representative
thank
Mullery.
You, Mr. Chairman. And I just kind of wondered if it would go across the board or if that would – there's certain programs have been added specifically in recent years – such as I think one of them in this area was dealing with mentally ill people. I can't remember. I'm not sure if it was part of this grant. I'm just wondering if Mr. Melton would know if this is just going to be an across the board that police have to contribute a little more, or would it affect certain programs?
Mr. Carger, you can make a comment, and we can ask something.
And I found the change item page, and basically this will reduce the per officer share for their training from $358 in fiscal year 2010 to approximately $345 in fiscal year 12 through 13, and that's in the change item page. So it's $13 per officer reduction, if my math is correct.
You could give us a quick briefing on this training, what it goes for.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. The training reimbursement is, as the Chair described, sent back to the agencies to be used at their discretion. And it's on a per-officer share for officers who have worked a minimum of 8 months during that previous year. So at $358 in the last year, it's up to the chief or sheriff or state agency director to determine how that money is spent. There are two training requirements, however. One is use of force training, and that must be completed annually, so that's always a priority. Second is pursuits and emergency vehicle operations for those officers who are not exempt from that training. And aside from that, it is completely a decision of local control as to what training is paid for.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the post board has got a small enough budget the way it is, so why the governor took the that amount out of there, it's hard to figure. And some of the things that you do is the post board used to keep track of officers' credits, continuing education credits, similar to educators have or lawyers and some of their miles training. And one of the reductions that the post board had to make I believe, was now it's up to the officer and the department to keep track of their own credits, which is another burden on the local police force. One thing that used to be done. So each one of these reductions has a definite effect on the agency. Mr. Carter, go ahead.
And Mr. Chair, on that point too, for the post board, I believe that wasn't it last year? I don't know if it was your bill where they reduced some of the requirement for pursuit training from 3 years to 4 years, or
that's correct. Like that. As a cost saving measure. No, I see there's a bill this year to get rid of it entirely, and I don't know how far that'll go. But Mr. Carter.
Okay, members, Mr. Chair, on line 79, you have the private detective board. Once again, the governor is recommending no change to base on that. It's a small agency, $240,000 for the biennium. The next agency that this committee is responsible for is the Human Rights Department, and the governor is recommending no change to base in this agency, and that's their total appropriation is around the 6.68 million for the biennium. Members, next we go into the Department of Corrections. This is the large agency. This is our largest agency, and we'll start off with institutions, which is the largest program that this in corrections and that this committee is responsible for. First of all, you have on line 95, the first change item is to maintain core functions. Basically, this is to make up for the federal funding that the corrections received. This was the federal stimulus funding. It was a one-time appropriation, but we did not make it up in tail. So in other words, that reduction was going to continue because it was one-time federal money. So this makes up that reduction, and it is at For the biennium, it's close to $27 million. On line 96, it's continuation of CD treatment, and this is at the Faribault facility. Basically, this is a federal grant that is running out, I believe, the end of this year, and it's going to mean 90 beds that they would have to stop using. So you can see that there's a $450,000 appropriation to continue this in fiscal year 2012, and then it goes up to $900,000 in ongoing funds. And the reason for that, the small amount for the first year, is because it will be federally funded for at least half that year. On line 97, we start off with operation budget reductions. This is basically a reduction to their operating budget. Corrections is saying that it will probably mean 5 full-time equivalents, and basically those equivalents, I think they're saying they can, they're currently vacant positions or projected to be vacant, and we're going to see this this item throughout the other two programs that Corrections has. The next program under Corrections is Community Services, and once again you have the operating budget reduction. That's at 5, basically, once again, 5 full-time equivalents will probably be lost in that. And that is the recommended reduction there for the biennium is $632,000. The next item on line 109 is offender supervision reduction. This is a reduction to probation officers, to the CCA funding formula, to the CPO counties that you heard about, and the DOC counties. And I think it's a little over 2% on that reduction for each of those, but the total for the biennium is $3.13 million. This is ongoing. This will be an ongoing reduction that the governor is recommending. Then on line 110, this is the elimination of the sex offender grant. And this grant currently goes to Dodge, Fillmore, and Olmsted counties. It was... In the change item sheet, it says it was started in 1989, I believe, as a pilot project, and it's the governor is recommending a reduction of $138,000 each year. The rationale for this, according to the change item, it is not statewide. It just goes to, three counties. I also should point out that this item was in the House's budget and the Senate's budget one time where they tried to reduce this.
I'm trying to figure out, Mr. Carter, and why you would take money out of supervision reduction, and maybe it's because he's going to approve my doubling the sentence for sex offenders, and we'll have that many less people to supervise. I don't know. But they'll all be in jail. This is a hard one to figure out because we heard about the success of our probation programs yesterday and the importance of supervision, and that's one of the reasons Minnesota is so successful in a low incarceration rate is because we do a good job of supervision. And so this distresses me that we would take this much money out of our supervision. So, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe quickly, I just say ditto. That was the one thing that I really disliked about this budget for our committee was it's a huge issue for everyone in the state to not have good supervision of people that are out there because it keeps them out of recidivism, and that's one thing I hope we will look at strongly about, as you said, maintaining.
Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Mullery, I did a brief calculation the other day on this, and just what the state costs are for institution versus probation and supervised release funding. And the institutions make up for fiscal year 2011 over $428 million, and that's about 83.5%. And probation and supervised release funding makes up a little over $84 million, and that's about 16.5%. So just as a little side note to that issue. The next, we'll go to page 3 then on the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, it seems if institutions are 83% and the other 16%, and yet the operating budget reduction is very close to equal, 630-something to 800, there's an obvious not equal in percentage to the total budgets of the operating budget reduction.
Yeah.
Do you know why or anything?
Mr. Chair, first of all, I should point out that is just state funding, too, that I referenced. Mm-hmm. It doesn't include the county appropriations,
right,
because as we all know, the counties play a big part in the probation services,
right,
funding. And that, and also, we do have somebody here from Corrections, but community services includes more than just, that program includes more than just probation, mm-hmm, and the CCA funding. There's jail inspections, there's licensing under there, and other activities.
Okay, Mr. Carter.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then the last program under corrections is the Operation Support Program. And on line 120, you will see the governor's recommendation there is a operating budget reduction of $670,000 for the biennium. Basically, they're saying this will be 4 full-time equivalents that will be lost. But once again, in their change item page, they will say that this will be done with current vacancies or vacancies that are projected to come in the future. So you can see that's the spreadsheet, the total funding there on line 140 for this committee that the governor is recommending is $1.259 billion. And then the last item just is the revenue adjustment. That's the fire safety account going to the general fund for $5.266 million.
Hey, any questions from members overall on if you folks want to get to me, if you're input somewhere along the process, I have no problem with no input. It makes it easier for me. But if you do give me input, please bring it early, because don't wait till the last minute before we're in here in our last meeting in the middle of the night marking down figures and then come up and say, I forgot about this or that. It makes it really difficult because this is taken in increments, meeting after meeting, and massaging the accounts and switching figures and lines in it. And Mr. Carter, did you have more information?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was asked yesterday if I could maybe just shed a little some more light on the probation systems that we talked about. And I think there is a handout that you have on some of the probation items. And I just want to go over that. But first of all, I just want, for members, I want to give you information on who is in prison. I mean, when I first heard this, you know, it struck me as being, you know, different than what I expected. I think most people expect that when you go to prison, it's going to be, for a new commitment. But you can see in that handout that new commitments make up 65% or 66.5% of prisoners. This is on this was information I received from Corrections for one day. I think it was July of last year. Probation violators make up 15.2%, and supervised release violators make up 18.3%. And you can see that the average length of stay there for a probation violator is a little over 12 months, and for a release violator is 6.5 months. But now I just want to give you another figure. This is a breakdown of prison admissions that are coming into prison. The new commits make up 40.5% of new admissions. Probation violators make up 28.5%, and release violators make up 31%. And this, once again, is information that we received from Corrections. Now, this leads into, on the bottom of your page, probation revocations. This was discussed by Representative Johnson and Representative Kelly yesterday. And I just want to give this to the rest of the members here so you have some idea of what they were talking about. There, what they were mentioning came from a probation revocation report that Sentencing Guidelines did. This is the second year that of this report. The report came out, I believe, in October of 2010. And it's for all offenders that were sentenced from 2001 through 2008 and were revoked to prison for technical violations. And as Representative Kelly informed me yesterday, this does not include new commits. I mean, you know, for a new crime, it's just for technical violations. And you can see that I went later and I broke down from this report, I broke it down statewide, that the average percentage of cases being revoked was 15%. Then there was one of the members said, well, is there a difference between CCA, you know, those 32 counties that make up about 72% of the population, or non-CCA counties? And you can see that they're almost identical. Total CCA, 14.8%, non-CCA, 15%. But you look at the comparison, though, between some counties. And I know some of you, some members here want benchmarking, they want comparisons. So what we did here is we took from that report, we took the counties with the lowest rates, compared them with the counties with the highest rates. And you can see there that, you know, Lake of the Woods, that for counties with the lowest rates, well, they only had one revocation, so we might not even include them, but it was a 2.3%. But you see Carver was the next one, 5.1% being revoked to prison. And then it goes down Carlton County in northeastern Minnesota, 5.6%, Yellow Medicine, 6.3%. But then you look at the chart on the right, counties with the highest rate. You know, Dodge, 30.7%, Stevens, 28.2%, Mauer, 27.4%, and, you know, down the list. So I think, you know, this was brought up in committee, and I just wanted to give this to all members to have to take a look at.
Representative Mullery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Carter, maybe you or somebody could tell me, does the county then, if they, let's say they're under our present system, since we're not paying the full amount, obviously, or anywhere close to it for the county supervision on probation, if they send somebody back, let's say somebody in Lake of the Woods and one in Dodge both get a urine violation, if Dodge sends them back to prison and Lake of the Woods doesn't, does that get all the cost off of Dodge then for them, whereas otherwise they have to spend more money on supervision and different things, or how does that work?
Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, you are correct. If the county sends the individual, the offender that's being revoked to prison, then the state will pick up 100% of that cost.
Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up, is there a way we can find out what reasons people are being sent back and from the different counties? And I guess I'm looking at if we really did spend the money, I mean, I don't want to take them out of prison and then not spend the money for supervision, but if we actually did do a good job of supervision, would there be a point in sometimes not sending everybody back for every violation if they're not dangerous in any way to anybody?
Mr. Carter?
Maybe you don't right off the top know that. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, this, I think what it does, it doesn't condemn these counties. I mean, maybe the lower counties aren't sending enough to prison. Who knows? But I think the question is, this does deserve further study. Now, I've also... I just want to reference a couple things that we've been doing some research for members here, and I know I've handed a couple of articles out, where Arizona, they're doing performance-based budgeting, and what they're doing is they're giving the incentives to the counties to reduce their revocation rate. And they have reduced it over 20%. You know, in Kansas is the same thing, where there's some incentive there for the counties to keep them locally. There's also in Arizona, in fact, I called out there the other day, and they told me that their system is working great. The counties were going to receive 40% of all savings, but of course they had a budget crunch, and the state took that away from them, but they're still reducing their revocations. They're also doing something that I talked about a little bit last year. It's Project Hope from Hawaii. They're calling it Project Safe. And it's when they get the dirty UA, or they would be going to prison for something, they're taking these people and they're putting them in jail for the weekend or for up to 7 days. Immediate sanctions, then they're being released again. They're saying they have great success with this. I don't know. But that's just some information on that.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Mueller,
as you know, I'm doing a lot with NCSL on this, and Texas is doing that, I believe Missouri. There's a lot of states looking into this issue, and we certainly don't want to make the public more unsafe, but if there's somebody that's not a danger in any way, maybe there's other possible less costly ways to treat them and actually help them at the same time.
Yeah, that's. I know the question has come up before, too. What if the technical violation sent them back to prison? What if we cut the length of stay when they get sent back to half of what they normally would get? You know, would it be a savings, or what's the point of diminishing return when it turns out to be a slap on the wrist and they don't learn anything from it? Or what's the, you know, if you send them back for a year or 6 months, or what is the normal term on a is it like 90 or 60 days?
The average was for a technical probation violation was 12.1 months.
Yeah. So if it would be interesting to see, you know, the money you would save by cutting that in half, and then asking corrections how that affects the person's personality, if they end up just coming back sooner, or if it is a deterrent for the 6 months instead of a year. But maybe we can look into that and do some study on that. Yes, Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment on that, and I made a little bit of comment yesterday too, but I happen to be pretty good friends with somebody who's been in the probation system for probably somewhere between 25 and 30 years. But it's interesting, he just happened to stop my office, my insurance office, last week, and he just said that there seems to be a concerted effort to shift nonviolent criminals, like for these types of things, to the state prison versus keeping them in the local county jails. And, of course, the per diem rate is substantially higher at the state prison. The other thing he said that as far as he was aware, a lot of the county jails are only partially full. So it's not the fact that there isn't room to keep them there at a much lower rate, but that they're being sent up to the state prison. Now, he gave a specific reason why. I won't share that publicly here today. I shared it with the person who testified yesterday from that department, and he seemed to confirm what my friend had said. But I do think that's an area that, you know, with the percentages shown here, that there could be substantial, not even shortening the time as much as using the local county jails versus the state prison for these nonviolent revocations. Anyway, that's just an initial thought, and if you have any response or thoughts, I'm open to it.
Well, my thoughts would be we would look into it and do some studying on that in both ways, county jails, length of recommitments, and because sometimes we just want to, we get mad. I know the cops on the street, they see somebody do a couple technical violations, they want them thrown in right away because mm-hmm. it's a real pain in the rear to them and the public, but then you have to pay for it too every time you throw them back in. So we got to find out where the point is. Where,
well, Mr. Chair, my friend who was in the probation system did not indicate that they shouldn't spend the time, but where they spent the time, whether at the local county jail or in a state prison.
Right. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my eyes are a little bit younger than yours, but I still cannot read the PowerPoint on which counties are CCA versus not. So, Mr. Carger, do you know in the comparison of revocation rates where we've got Lake of the Woods in that list and then Dodge in that list, off the top of your head, whether those are which ones are CCA counties and which ones are DOC?
You know,
Mr. Carger?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I know. I think Dodge is CCA, Beltrami, I'm not sure. But we have somebody
Power
here, a representative from the counties that might be able to.
There he is.
And as we do that, too, Mr. Carger, just another quick question on the slide before that, the probation revocation slide that talks about total statewide, total CCA, and then total non-CCA.
Right.
Is that right? That total I guess I don't understand that stack. Is total statewide equals the same as total non-CCA?
This good morning.
Yeah.
Or do you want to try?
I think on this one, the totals came from the probation, the revocation work, and this is a sort of like a running total from what was it, 2001 to 2008.
Okay. But you see what I'm saying? The total statewide,
it doesn't make sense,
is the exact same number as total non-CCA. Wouldn't it be total CCA
right.
plus total non-CCA
right.
equal total statewide?
Yes, there may be a mistake.
Okay,
in
thank you, because right. that's an important stat right. that I'd like to understand.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Kern.
Good morning, sir. You heard some of the questions back before. You shed any light on it, and then if you would, give me maybe your opinion of why it varies so much between accounts.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ryan Erdman. I'm the Director and Legislative Liaison for the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act Counties. I apologize for not being in a time on my way to my son's school for an event here very shortly. So let me say that to start with. On the list of the counties that's the top five and bottom five, I don't actually have it in front of me, but I did see it before the hearing started. I know, thank you, Representative. Lake of the Woods is a DOC contract county. Carver County is a CPO county. Carlton, Yellow Medicine, and Lac qui Parle are all CCA. On the high side, Dodge is a CCA. Stevens, I believe, is a CPO county. Stevens is a CPO county. Mauer is definitely a CPO county. Freeborn, I believe, is DOC contract. And Beltrami, I'm certain, is DOC contract. And then as far as, Mr. Chair, your question about why that is, it is very much a mystery to me and will take a little investigation. And one of the things I will point out, Lake of the Woods and Beltrami County are at the top and the bottom. They're both DOC contract counties. They're actually in the same supervision district from a management standpoint as each other. There are probably some overlapping agents, and I believe they're also in the same judicial district, so you've got the same judges working there. So you don't have, until we talk about the variables in the system, in that case there aren't variables in the system, yet they're the lowest and one of the highest. So there's clearly more going on here than just, you know, whether it's CCA or CPO, and given the mix of both on both ends of the list, there's not a simple explanation from that perspective of what it is. The one thing I will offer, and this does get into some of the differences between CCA and CPO, is different counties will use things like electronic monitoring or GPS monitoring more or less, especially something like GPS. If you use more of that, you're probably more likely to end up with some revocations in that case. But that's purely speculative on my part. It's just something that came up off the top of my head and clearly would require a lot more digging into to see if I'm accurately surmising that there.
Maybe we just got a frustrated PO up there that wants to send everybody away. I doubt it. But, yeah, it could just be something as simple as personality or their outlook on the system. So.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that and, you know, certainly the judges, too, in different parts of the state, even across delivery systems. If you have a judge with different delivery systems in their district, that judge's personality is going to reflect that regardless of who's doing the probation as well.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to Representative Grunhagen's point on the use of local county jails as an alternative, there are unintended consequences for that as well. I worked in the Ramsey County Workhouse for a few years when we took on short-term offenders, state prisoners, and essentially resulted in an unfunded mandate to the county to provide more care for a bunch more people, requiring more staff, more food preparation, more admissions personnel and the like. So it's not without its consequence. Plus, the type of inmate was significantly different than the one that was incarcerated there and provided its own challenges. So when you look at that kind of alternative, it's not just as simple as taking on another body. There's financial implications as well as supervision implications that affect the local county.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Representative Johnson. And Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to state, I think, the obvious, that because it's always great to state when there's a bipartisan interest in something. We shouldn't let that go. That there seems to be a real strong interest on the part of this committee to understand better what the dynamics might be. And it sounds like the dynamic. Initially, the answers are going to be, you know, it's probably pretty complex. There's various variables. But even just being able to identify what those variables are and begin to try to assign some weight to them, I think, would be helpful to us as we struggle with budgetary issues.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if we could all work together and whether it's taxes or no taxes or whatever we get decided or how much revenue, if we could come to some real innovative solutions to find money within our budget to allay a lot of these concerns we have about our groups that we're interested in. That'd be super. Anybody else? Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess along to your point, and first of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Carter for his presentation today. I think that's very important, and for also the other things that you've been looking up for us along the way. But this kind of goes back to Representative Mulready's first comment when he said, you know, the budget looks fine right now. But I think we're all realistic here and understand that this is not going to be our budget. And I would echo the chair's plea of to come up with solutions prior to when we get our hard targets. Because if we don't, what we're in for is some very drastic things that we don't have a whole lot of control over because we don't have enough time. You know, in our budget situation, a lot of times we hold harmless, we try to hold harmless education or health and human services, and then we try and balance our entire budget on 30% that's left, which is public safety is a big part of that. And I guess what's nice about this committee, after serving on it for the last couple of years, is that when it gets down to it, we all are serious about public safety and have a better understanding than those that haven't been able to sit on this committee. So I guess I would just make that plea as well, is that if we've got solutions, because we know this isn't going to be the figure, we better come up with them quicker rather than later. And just echoing your thoughts, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Any other comments? If not, we're about to adjourn and come back with... Do you know which agency it is going to be?
Private Detective.
Okay, Private Detective Board on Tuesday, and thank you very much, and no comments, meeting adjourned.